Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Hal Wolf, President and CEO of HIMSS, the Health Information Management System Society, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing health IT to improve healthcare and healthcare management. They're about to host HIMSS Global Conference, the largest gathering in the world of health industry players, providers, and innovators, all seeking to transform healthcare. Lori Robertson also checks in, the managing editor of FactCheck.org, looks at misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain, separating the fake from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com. Or find us on Facebook or Twitter, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Hal Wolf, CEO of HIMSS, on Conversations on Healthcare.
We're speaking today with Hal Wolf, President and CEO of HIMSS, the Healthcare Information Management System Society, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the best use of information technology and management systems to improve the healthcare industry. Prior to joining HIMSS, Mr. Wolf served as director of at the Chartis Group, overseeing development of video on demand, and before that was chief operating officer of the Kaiser Permanente Federation, where he focused in on data management and population health. He began his career as an executive at MTV, using television to transform the music business. Hal, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you preside over the world's largest organization dedicated to advancing information technology in the healthcare space, and HIMSS includes close to 600 corporate partners, provider organizations, and I'm wondering if you could illuminate for our listeners the full scope of your mission and how you pull all these entities together to facilitate tech solutions.
Mark, we are absolutely dedicated to the transformation of health through the use of information and technology. And it started back in 1961, looking at computer software and starting to think, how can we make this applicable into healthcare and start to bring the focus and a dimensional look at the use of information and, of course, technology. What we have made sure of is to ensure that we are as collaborative as possible. So we reach out consistently to other nonprofits to see if we can help them. The point of the matter is that we're all trying to solve the same problem, which is to improve healthcare. So the more we can all work together, the better we can challenge the system as it currently exists.
You know, we hear a lot that the healthcare industry has to catch up to other industries like banking and manufacturing in terms of adopting tech-enabled innovations. And you've said yourself that the pace is, if anything, going to continue to accelerate. But you've also recognized that we have to do a better job of creating a culture of innovation in healthcare that will facilitate such change. And I think very importantly to all of us who are on the front lines, we have to do that while still making it possible for the people who deliver the care, right, to use the innovation in a way that is successful for them. So how do we do a better job of creating a culture in healthcare that facilitates rapid adoption of innovation and innovation that really works for those who are delivering the care?
When you think about healthcare as an industry, it really hasn't been one. It's been more individual hospitals. So how do you bring innovation into healthcare? And let's also remember that healthcare operates under a very important creed, which is to do no harm. So we spend a tremendous amount of time in healthcare to eliminate variation. And then we walk in and we say, and oh, by the way, you need to change things quickly. And change in healthcare comes slowly. And yet we live in a world of innovation, which is changing on the technology front literally every 6 months. So when we talk about this critical need to change culture so that we can innovate, it really is about workforce development. It really is about creating an environment where people in healthcare can learn to fail fast. Meaning if something isn't working, switch it. It takes a change in the way that an organization thinks about its use of information, about how its staff needs to work outside in, meaning from the patient, back into the clinic, versus we are the medical industry and you will come to us. And that has changed, and consumer expectations have changed. There's a formula that we use at HIMSS, which is OO plus NT equals COO, which means old organization plus new technology equals costly old organization. So it takes people, process, and technology in order to be able to move forward quicker and faster in innovation.
I was thinking back that we had your predecessor, Steve Lieber, on the show. Back then, we were focusing on adoption and interoperability. I think we've moved the needle on adoption. Still are struggling for the interoperability to be out there on the horizon. And we've seen this enormous amount of data that's being generated out of all these health systems. And on the other hand, we have this rise in cybersecurity. I know HIMSS has been concerned about that, the hacks that are happening in the healthcare industry. I think it's axiomatic that as innovation accelerates, so has this pace of new challenges arisen. And I'm wondering if you could talk to our listeners about how you've addressed both ongoing and emerging challenges at HIMSS.
We are dealing in a world right now where the amount of data that exists is doubling globally about every 18 months. Healthcare is no exception. In fact, I would say we're more than doubling every 18 months just within our particular sector. And the reason for that is that both in the medical model, meaning at the hospital level, clinical level, the physician level, nurse practitioner, they're using information and they've never used it before. And of course, each one of us as a consumer with our smartphones, our computers, our laptops, we are generating a massive amount of social exhaust. And we also use it every day to think about in healthcare, what treatment should we get, doing self-diagnoses, looking up doctors, et cetera. So there's a huge amount of information that's pouring in. One of the big items that's missing is lack of actionable information. How do I take the information that is needed for clinical decision support, which includes my clinical data, my personal data, where I want to be contacted, who's in my support group, who's in my family? All of these things are part of the information pieces that come together to help facilitate best procedures, best outcomes for the individual about personalized medicine. And we haven't even gotten to the point of adding in genomics. So we need two things. One is we need access to the right information at the right time. But all of that information, that data, must be supported in an extremely secure way. So our focus on cybersecurity, the sessions that we run, the policymakers that we talk to both in the United States and the EU and Asia, we talk about cybersecurity as a critical stepping stone in dependency, because individuals need to know who has access to my information and how is it being used. And I cannot emphasize enough that we at HIMSS continue to work on interoperability. It has a consistent format, whether you're looking at a device on your arm like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, just to name two, and there are many, many others, to large EMR machines that are gathering information, putting it down, and transporting it for someone else to be able to interpret halfway across the globe because it's 2 a.m. These are the ways that cybersecurity becomes so critically important, and we have to be very conscious of the cyber environment and making sure that people's information is protected but available for our use, or we're going to miss the opportunities to be even better in care delivery.
Well, I would assume that all of that adds up to one very exciting agenda for the upcoming HIMSS 2019 conference, biggest global health information and technology conference in the world. I understand you draw more than 45,000 participants together to showcase innovations and share insights. In addition to the speakers and the hundreds of learning sessions, you have an exhibit area where people can walk right into a demonstration of IBM's Watson or Intermountain Health's video simulator or Google's latest cloud iteration. So share with us the theme of this year's conference, and what do you think the highlights are likely to be?
As you mentioned, we have 45,000 people coming into the conference each year. The theme this year is Champions of Health. And when we have our global conference, people come literally from around the world in order to share best practices, to understand what might fit their particular environment. mean, we're starting off with an initial keynote on consumer-driven exchanges, and with is the Secretary Verma. We have Karen DeSalvo, who formerly was with HHS, when you have Governor Mike Leavitt up on stage at the same time discussing how do we work on different components of this marriage between government, citizen, patient, consumer, all three hats. We have forums on pharma. We have cybersecurity conversations taking place. We have incredible areas called Venture Connect, where brand new startups, companies in their second and third round of funding get exposure to people who are interested in investing. And then finally, on a global basis, we also have showcases from countries and the government, as a matter of fact. So our own government from CMS will show some of the different products and services that people need to use in order to transport their information. What are they doing to, from the VA standpoint, to make life easier from a blue button program and data sharing? Israel is an example. Italy is an example of countries, Finland, that are showcasing their particular innovations that they want the world to be able to see. So this is about global thought leadership. It's about an amazing array of products and services that you will never see anywhere else in one place on the globe. Tens and tens of thousands of square feet, hundreds of thousands of square feet of exhibits and conversations that are taking place. I think this year we're going to see a lot of emphasis on cybersecurity and a lot of emphasis on data and data management. I think those will be huge topics. And we are recognizing that we're being impacted globally by GDPR, which is how information is managed from Europe. And the rules and the restrictions there are having a downstream impact on us. So we're expecting a very vibrant and sort of program for the global conference around Champions of Health Unite.
We're speaking today with Hal Wolf, President and CEO of HIMSS, the Healthcare Information Management Systems Society, dedicated to promoting the best use of technology and management systems to improve the healthcare industry. Hal, that conference sounds just great. And this year, there will be a larger focus on the emergence of blockchain and healthcare. And you said that the industry player who cracks the blockchain code for adoption in healthcare will, quote, own the market. And I think I've seen recent information out there that suggests that maybe we'll see about a third of large systems in the next 5 or 6 years embrace blockchain. But tell us why you're so bullish on blockchain and why you think it may hold the power to truly disrupt the industry.
So let's talk about where blockchain comes from. Traditionally, it was set up as a ledger capability so that on a monetary basis or an information basis, I can distribute an individual's record, in this case a banking record, but now think about it as healthcare, in a multitude of places so that it doesn't sit or reside in one specific location. And one of the challenges in cybersecurity has always been if I can break into its computer and I can look at someone's entire record at one time, if I can grab a hold of that, then I have stolen critical information. What blockchain does is that it creates a distributed chain of the information with a particular key that then draws it all back together. So we absolutely see areas where blockchain, as an example, can be very helpful in healthcare. Record formation is a perfect example. The exchange of data on a secure basis is another. If you think about its traditional use in terms of financing, imagine blockchain tied to your particular benefit for your particular insurance company, and then people have access to the information of what you can pay for, what you can't pay for. It's in more real time. So benefit administration is another example. All of that is predicated upon two important points. I need the data. It needs to be secure, and it needs to be available. So we believe that blockchain is super important to speed administration and security of information and accessibility of it on a global basis through your individual key or through an organization's individual key. So that's why we're so excited about it, and we continue to push for interoperability and exchange, and we see it's a major upside, and there'll be a lot of focus on it at the upcoming global conference as well.
Well, Hal, I was taken by some of your information about the work that HIMSS does in extending education and certification opportunities to people, not just at the conference, but actually all throughout the year. This is something we've recognized as so important in healthcare. It's really got to be targeted, focused, what you need to know now, ongoing continuing education throughout the career. So tell us how you're connecting the training and education mission to people in the field and the impact that you think this has potentially on advancing your goals of creating this culture of change.
We live in a situation where we have this changing environment in healthcare. Traditionally, people have relied on what they learned in college and maybe some courses that they take in between. We're about to tap into a world where clinical decision support is online. It's extremely robust, and it encompasses knowledge management that crisscrosses literally over 3,000 to 4,000 peer review articles per year. It's much more than any one individual can keep up with. So we've always recognized that workforce development is absolutely imperative in order to be able to keep people up with the changing of the environment and take full advantage of the information that's coming. So we operate certification programs in healthcare information and management systems for the professional. We have early career communities that we've established. We have e-mentor programs to connect people with others who have gone through it. So as they're working on innovation, if they're working on technology challenges, they are tied in with someone who can help and support them. And we even have Veterans Career Services initiatives that help military veterans. And when they come back into healthcare, we find them the right place to go. One of the more exciting ones this year is we've just created a new affiliation with Harvard Medical School, and we'll be teaching a class this coming late spring, early summer at Harvard, educating executives, CEOs, as well as chief medical information officers on the use of information and how they need to think about that information with their systems, how they're going to train their staff, and how they're going to be able to transform the industry. So workforce development and our certification programs are designed to do that. And we're extraordinarily proud of our group.
Well, we've been talking somewhat about trends, or I'd say new technologies, AI, big analytics, blockchain, the additional data that's going to be generated out of the genomics and personalized medicine, voice technology. What do you see as trends that we should keep our eye in the future?
Mark, the impact of artificial intelligence is going to be monstrous as well. Part of what AI does, artificial intelligence, is that it takes our algorithms, what we know now, and then it applies other components and comes back with new connected dots. And we're beginning to see AI work its way into clinical decision support, thinking about what is the best delivery of care for an individual in this particular setting. You know, far too often best practice in healthcare is based upon almost a perfect standard. Someone develops something for their facility, it produces the very best results possible, and then we publish it. So now I have to be able to take that best practice and I have to apply it to my setting, and then I have to be able to apply it to my individual who I'm trying to treat. What AI allows us to do is to be able to take all those different components into account simultaneously and to be able to give a recommendation to a clinician or to the patient in very short time, something that takes place in a minute versus weeks or months of research. And as we develop our artificial intelligence programs, we need to be able to document them to the best of our ability, but things are going to happen at a faster pace. And recommendations could happen at a faster pace than traditional peer review process. So that's what I meant earlier by saying this is going to be interesting times. It's going to challenge us in how we think about that innovation and how we think about those recommendations. But I believe that artificial intelligence will have a tremendous impact in the next 2 to 3 years and continue to accelerate in healthcare.
We've been speaking today with Hal Wolf, the president and CEO of HIMSS, the Healthcare Information Management Systems Society. You can learn more about their work by going to HIMSS.org or follow them on Twitter at HIMSS, and that's spelled H-I-M-S-S. Hal, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
In December, two children from Guatemala died while in the custody of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, a 7-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy. That sparked criticism of the government's ability to care for young immigrants. And that criticism, in turn, sparked some false social media claims. Viral Post argued that, quote, during the Obama administration, 18 children died while in custody of Border Patrol. That's false. No children died while in custody of Customs and Border Protection during the Obama administration. In fact, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen said in a December 26 statement that, quote, it has been more than a decade since CBP has had a child pass away in their custody. U.S. Border Patrol is a part of CBP, which is an agency within DHS. The most recent data publicly available from a 2016 report to Congress show that CBP reported 13 deaths in fiscal year 2015. 10 of those deaths were the result of, quote, use of force. We asked CBP for more information on the deaths of immigrants in its custody, but did not get a response. According to data from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, none of the 67 immigrants who died while in ICE custody during the Obama years were children. The 18 children claim may be a misrepresentation of a story published December 18th by the Daily Caller. That story revisited a 2016 analysis by Human Rights Watch on 18 immigrant detainee deaths from mid-2012 to mid-2015. But the story says that those detainees were ages 24 to 49. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Vaccinations are considered one of the great public health achievements of the 20th century, reducing fatalities from most common and fatal diseases by up to 99%. As recently as 2009, only 45% of the nation's preschool-age children had received all of their recommended vaccinations and boosters, and researchers at the Children's Outcome Research Program at Children's Hospital in Colorado decided to take an in-depth look at the problem.
Primary care practitioners are so overstretched that it's rather impractical. And they also require a level of technical expertise that sometimes they don't have.
Dr. Allison Kemp conducted a study on what would help to generate better compliance with the required vaccinations. And she found that when parents received timely reminders from their state and local health departments, parents were much more likely to get the vaccinations and boosters for their children that they needed.
What our study did was to centralize those efforts. So it didn't take away from the primary care providers, but it helped them to do the reminder recall for their practices centrally using a state registry.
Dr. Kemp says her research shows that when a reminder message can be generated, it takes the onus and the burden off of the primary care and pediatric practices.
In a fairly short 6-month period, about 19% of children who were not up to date became up to date, which on a population level within 6 months is really very powerful.
And the study also suggests that there's a cost savings with a centralized state or county-run database and reminder system.
One case of influenza Haemophilus meningitis can cost tens of thousands of dollars. The costs of not preventing these illnesses are very high.
A state health department-driven vaccination program that assists private practices in vaccine compliance for their patient population, improving vaccination rates of young and vulnerable children. Now that's a bright idea.
You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at chcradio.com, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. The show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.